Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Childhood nutrition plays a vital role in future health and well-being of our kids, but unfortunately, it's not always smooth sailing. How can you tell if toddlers and preschoolers have dietary sensitivities or other issues? And how can you handle them? Today on Parent Savers, we're talking with Lindsay Hurd, a registered dietitian and lactation consultant, about sensory and dietary issues in children. This is Parent Savers.
Faster than a speeding toddler.
Sit still for just a minute.
Can soothe boo-boos with a gentle kiss.
Would you get down from there?
Able to clean poopy bottoms in a single swipe.
Oh, what did you eat?
Turning frazzled mommies and daddies into procreators of peace and harmony.
Ah, quit touching me.
It's Parent Savers, empowering new parents everywhere.
Welcome, everybody, to Parent Savers, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. Parent Savers is your weekly online, on-the-go support group for parents from the newborn years through kindergarten. I'm your host, John Ariel. Thanks again to all of our loyal listeners who join us week in and week out. And thanks also to those who are listening for the first time. As you may know, you can join our Parent Savers Club and receive access to special bonus content after each new show, plus special giveaways and discounts from time to time. I've got Aaron fidgeting over there in case you guys can hear it. It's okay. It breaks up the monotony of the boilerplate stuff we do at the beginning each time. And if you haven't already, please make sure to download the free Parent Savers app. It's available in the Android and iTunes marketplace and for Windows Phone, so you can automatically have access to all the great parenting advice and conversation we have on Parent Savers every week. Let's start today's conversation about sensory and dietary issues by introducing all of us that are in the room. I will start with myself. My name's Johnner, as many of you know who've listened before. I have three boys, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and an almost 3-year-old. And I would definitely say that they have dietary issues. I'm not sure about the sensory issues part, and I'm not sure if the issues part is more legitimate issues or me not liking what they're doing. So, anyway, Jane.
Hi, I'm Jane. I am a stay-at-home mom, and I have a little boy, Caden, who is a little over 2 years old.
Nice. I'm Gina. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have a little boy who's 26 months or 2 years old.
Perfect. And I am Erin Esteves, otherwise known as OG Mamacita. And I have one boy who is 2.5.
And Lindsay is joining us via Skype. Lindsay, tell us about yourself.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Hurd, and I am a dietitian and lactation consultant. And I work for myself. My business name is Angel Food Lactation and Nutrition. So I provide nutrition and lactation consults for clients in Wilmington, North Carolina, and also provide Skype counseling for really anyone throughout the country. And so do that mainly for nutrition services, but also some related to lactation.
Well, great. Thanks for joining us. Before we jump into today's topic, from time to time on Parent Savers, we look at news headlines, and it's a topic that's in the news that we think is noteworthy to parents. And this one is noteworthy, especially to parents, I think, with older kids, but really any parent that has any sympathy or compassion. And it's a story that we got actually today on the day we're recording it, so it's pretty current here in May of 2014, about a mom that paid off every student's balance following the denial of a school lunch to her son. And this woman named Amanda Keown got a call in Dowagiac, Michigan, and I definitely pronounced that wrong. Anyway, it's in Michigan. And he told his mom that he hadn't gotten his hot lunch that day because he had an outstanding balance. And I think it was something like his account owed $5 and he only had $2 that day. And so then the school wouldn't give him. In fact, they threw his lunch down the trash, and then they put his name on a board along with those of his other peers that were delinquent in the lunch. And so then, Jane, you read this article too. What did the mom do after that?
So the mom ended up paying for her son as well as the other 19 delinquent kids' accounts to make sure that...
And it was about $200.
Yeah, yeah. It was about $200 that she paid out of her pocket to make sure that all the kids could get a lunch.
And this was a single mom.
Single mom working two jobs.
So it definitely was, yeah. You know, it was a hardship.
Well, but the outrage, of course, is like, what's the school thinking?
I know.
That's, like, yeah. posting that stuff?
Well, a lot of the comments that are made on the article is they're blaming the parents, saying that they need to be the ones responsible to make sure that their accounts are up to date.
But, you know, we have 5 billion things to keep track of. We can only have so many calendar reminders. And, you know, frankly, it's not that we aren't considering the nutrition or health of our children. It's just that when we drop the kid off at school, I mean, I personally remember getting dropped off at school so many times without lunch money. And it having just been an oversight.
I think this, and even maybe to apply it just to overall parenting, it kind of just goes down to when there is a problem, how are we going to deal? What's the appropriate way to deal with the problem? And if it's a problem that kids aren't having their lunches, it's not really an appropriate way, A, to just waste the food and throw it away, or B, to publicly try to shame these kids. And I think that that is also an example that the adults need to set for kids on how they can appropriately deal with issues. Not to say that it's not an issue and the kids shouldn't be current, but how can we best deal with that so that we're not teaching kids the wrong thing?
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Today's topic on Parent Savers is sensory and dietary issues in children. Today we're talking with Lindsay Hurd, who's going to tell us all about the topic. Thanks for joining us, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
So I think I know, but we'll probably get into them later, some of the dietary issues, but I'm also intrigued by sensory issues. So what are sensory issues to food?
Yeah, so we find that some children, just have a heightened sensitivity to certain tastes and smells, even the touch of food, so the actual feel of the way food feels in their mouth. And so we're finding that, you know, some children have a difficult time in kind of processing all these signals that are sent to their brain from these different senses. And, it makes them kind of more susceptible to food preference and food pickiness, if you will. And so we're kind of finding that, you know, this is becoming, an abundant process, within our smaller children.
And so where do these come from?
We're kind of not completely sure. You know, we're finding that, really once babies are born, we're seeing some of the signs very early on, whether they have a difficult time feeding at the breast, whether they just get very disorganized or get very upset quickly. They may respond, in a worse way to a lot of stimulus. So, if they're in a room full of adults talking and there's a whole lot of noise going on, they could shut down a lot more quickly than other children. So we're really seeing this happen earlier than our children that are, able to voice their opinion and their feelings.
Jane is shaking her head. She's just nodding constantly, like ticking off boxes.
Yep.
So you experienced that early on with Caden?
I did. From birth, he never latched. He has been diagnosed with sensory processing disorder. And mostly his sensory issues are definitely food. Touch is an issue, and now auditory is an issue for him. Loud sounds, different sounds bother him. And it started at birth.
How did you identify that early on as a problem?
Mm-hmm. I think I was in denial until about 10 months. I wasn't able to latch, so I pumped. But once we started doing the solid foods was when we started noticing the issue. He was taking purees fine, but he wouldn't take any solid food. And when we got him into PT for some other related issue, she referred us to an OT. And she said, yes, he has sensory processing disorder because he didn't want to touch anything. He didn't like grass. He didn't like sand. He didn't want to be anywhere on the floor. Wow. So that's where we started that whole process. And it's been a long
journey.
2 years.
Wow. So is it common then, like you were saying, if you're going to see it, it's going to happen like from the get-go? Or is this something that children can kind of acquire as they age?
It's like a scale, you know, there are some that experience things more drastically versus others. So I think that you may very likely be able to see it early on. However, it could take until the child is able to voice, you know, what's going on in his body or in his mind to be able to really put the pieces together. Because so often we hear, you know, babies have different behaviors and you know, we may find that, you know, baby's not latching. Well, maybe that's associated with something else. And so we often try and find something that we can fix or that we can put our hands on kind of within the moment to, you know, resolve the issues for the family and for the mom and baby. So oftentimes things that may be a signal for this, you know, we're not really picking up on that. And just, you know, this is all very new to us as practitioners. So we're really learning about how we can help these families, and our families are really our best teachers. So, you know, we're very, very grateful for all the pieces and, you know, symptoms and signs that our families see.
I know that a lot of the families that I've talked to who have had issues have also talked about tongue tie and lip tie having problems with latching. And for some reason, that seems to be associated with sensory issues, sensory kids too. It's a midline defect that kids have.
Because I live in my own experience, my son was tongue tied. And I have noticed that he does have sensory issues with some food. And that also happened when we started introducing solid foods. You know, avocado will set off his gag reflex, but banana will set off my gag reflex too. So I just thought, oh, okay, no big deal. But yeah, he tends to start chewing food and then spit it out, almost like it's too much for his mouth.
So we're seeing that, you know, kind of the neurological aspect is playing a role with this. So the signals from our senses to our brain kind of gets mixed up with sensory processing disorder. So things can, we can perceive them as one way, but yet to a child with this disorder, things could be completely out of whack or thrown off. So it's almost like, you know, trying to walk down a road, you know, to get to your destination, and then you see a road closed sign, and then you have a hard time thinking, okay, do I turn right or do I turn left? What do I do? And, you know, whereas to someone without this disorder, they would easily be able to kind of reroute themselves.
Well, I think that that's, I mean, as we're talking about just this at the very high level, perception is like the ultimate personal thing. And we're talking about young kids, and how do you get tuned into their perception being different and then figuring out what to do, especially, you know, as you said, Lindsay, because so much parenting advice that we do get is, oh, every kid's different. Right. Like, oh, well, it's not always going to happen at the same time. And so wait, so, but your radar goes off, right? That there's just something that's off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I asked, for example, I asked my husband's family and my family if anybody had a history of spitting food out, you know, because it's just, it's odd. It just struck me as odd, and nobody had. And Jane and I were talking about it, and she's the one that mentioned to me about the possible sensory being linked to the tongue tied. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. So now it's kind of like somebody gave you a pair of glasses and suddenly you can see things and all of these little quirks that I had passed off as something or nothing now just kind of add to the idea that I have to take these things always into consideration. And Gina, you're sitting there shaking your head yes this time.
Yeah. I'd always be like kind of jealous because my friends' kids were like 10 months old eating a banana and we're vegan. And I'm like, dude, you should be eating bananas, watermelon, like all these things. Like, we're vegan. Come on.
Yeah.
And I would be like, here, try this. And he would gag, spit it out, throw it. And I'd be like in tears, you know. So I tried the solids. He did the solids. I tried, you know, every single fruit and vegetable possible. Mm-hmm. And he still hates like big pieces of fruits and vegetables. And so for me, it's really just learning how to get it in him yes. the right way. So we do a lot of pureeing in the Vitamix and a lot of green smoothies. And, you know, I just try to get to what he likes. And if he likes it, then that's pretty much in everything. But it's really difficult because you're trying to figure out what works for you. And you hear these other people say, like, well, my kid eats, you know, kale salad, and you're like, okay, well, that's great because my kid's eating pasta every day. Quinoa pasta, but you know,
if so, my kid has beans and rice again.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it never, like, now that I'm hearing people talk more about the sensory, I guess it never really crossed my mind that was a big issue for him. I just thought, oh, he's really picky, and he is a very picky eater. And he nursed well. He's always nursed well. We're still nursing. And that's, you know, to me, that's great. I feel like he's still getting nutrition that way. And I work really hard to feed him well. But he will gag and spit stuff yeah. out. If it's, like you said, if it's too big of a bite, he'll spit it out. So my biggest thing is I will shred our vegetables in this shredder thing that I have, mm-hmm. The Salad Master shredder. And I will cook those up really soft. And he will eat turnips, parsnips.
Oh, wow.
All wow. these things that I'm like, watching him like a hawk, seeing like, okay, he's not going to eat this, and he'll be like,
devour it.
Yeah, he's like, so good, mommy, and I'm like, crossing my fingers, and like, yes, I did it. But it's just figuring out. I think the thing is figuring out what works for your family, and not comparing your kids to other kids, especially if you know they have these little quirks and issues, because you're just going to find yourself always feeling down that your child's not good enough, or
not,
you know,
being fed well
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, like you're not a good mother or something like that. And it's just, it's like the mommy wars thing internally, and yes. you just don't need that.
Well, I'm wondering, talking nutritionally, I'm sorry, John, or I've just like taken over.
That's fine. Go for it. I'm fine with that.
I guess for moms like us, the nutrition aspect is huge. And, you know, I joked about it, but it's true. If my kid could eat beans and rice for every meal, he would be super pleased. And, you know, he has this very finite list of foods that he will willingly eat.
That's my son too.
And it's, and when he sees new food, he freaks the F out. It doesn't even have to be on his plate.
Right.
He just sees new foods. So I'm wondering to everyone on the panel, and Lindsay, how do you experience that? Have you experienced it? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Yeah, so I think, you know, speaking from a professional angle, we really find that consistency is so important. And even really with children without a sensory processing disorder, this is a very common scenario. And in my work and doing pediatric counseling, it's literally in every conversation I have with families, regardless of why they're there. So I really think that just across the board, this is a very common discussion that I have with families. And I think that the big thing in the story I just heard, I love how you really played on his interests and his likes, and you found success. You know, yes, he may not be eating a raw kale salad with a garlicky spread, but you know, he's still getting good nutrients and those components from foods, but in a way that's tolerable to him. And I think that that's the key, is trying to find the way that it can be pleasurable and enjoyable for them, but yet they're able to continue to expand their palate with flavors. Because as they get older and they're able to think a little bit more about the foods that they're eating, and they have the ability to kind of choose and make reasonable choices, and some will argue this takes to your 20s, but that's another topic altogether. But they really will have the palate to appreciate a variety of foods. Whereas if they get to the point where mentally they're able to kind of move past some of their sensory issues, then at that point they have such a bland palate because they have eaten foods that, you know, may be within their 10. And for most children, that's like the French fries, the chicken fingers, the mashed potatoes, you know, those very bland foods. And when they do begin to expand, you know, on what they're eating, the foods are so strong and they're so different that their taste buds kind of have a, you know, a moment of panic when they experience all these flavors. And so I think, you know, in really accommodating, you know, like I said, their consistency preferences or their placement of foods on their plate, you know, the time of day, all the presentation of the food, all that's important.
So what I'm getting from this is that we shouldn't overthink things, and we should be okay with feeding them the way they're happy, the way they're willing to eat. And as they age and as we grow with this experience, we'll be able to figure things out better. Okay. I just want to make sure that we're not too hard on ourselves.
Right. Absolutely. And I think to continue to offer foods, even if they spit it out or turn it down, all of that's a part of the process of tolerating something and really learning about the taste and all the senses of that food. So I think to continue to offer it, get them involved in the kitchen, have them help so that when they see it on their plate, they don't have that freak out moment. They're when you buy it at the grocery store, they're a part of the choosing process. Do you want broccoli or cauliflower tonight? Both of those foods may be something that they don't like, but to have the opportunity to select a food is very helpful. And then, and being a part of the preparation process, it's all very good things.
Yeah, that's one of the things that frustrates us, because our five-year-old is like the best helper in the world. He loves to go to the store. He loves to pick things out. He loves to cook everything. But the moment it comes to even thinking about eating that stuff, no. Like, oh, no. That, I'm not making that for me. Like, I'm happy to help, but he doesn't want anything to do with the food. But mm-hmm. But a lot of the feedback that we've been given, too, is just he'll be fine. Just kind of let it go. Don't want to force food on him.
Just keep telling myself this – the likelihood of this child starving to death is minimal.
Definitely.
Exactly. All right, we actually need to take a quick break, and we'll come back. There's still a ton of stuff to cover, and we'll cover as much of it as we can, including food allergies, maybe some acid reflux, and even natural remedies that we can do besides just let it be. All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to Parent Savers. Today, we're talking about sensory and dietary issues in children with Lindsay Hurd. So let me ask the big question that a lot of people, when you talk about food issues, and I feel like this always comes up topic, and I'd be interested in hearing your perspective, but why do you think there are more food allergies now, or are there even? Is this something that's more common now, or are we just more tuned into it?
So I think this is the big million-dollar question that many practitioners are doing lots of research and work towards finding out the exact cause. And we have definitely a handful of theories that, we perceive as being potential contributors of the increased rates of allergies. I think a lot of it is awareness, just with all other situations. The more we know about it, the more we say, hey, you know what, I think that I may be dealing with this too. And so now, maybe I'm allergic to cow's milk. And so I remove that component from my diet. And then, move forward having the perception that I'm allergic to that food. And so I think the awareness is definitely up, as well as the race. I think we can talk about in a few moments as some of those theories, but definitely more people are aware of the sensitivities that they have. I think that an important point to make is the difference between a food sensitivity and a true food allergy. And I think that a lot of folks are really kind of mixing those two terms up so that we're finding that, the allergy rates are increasing. However, some people may just be sensitive to a certain food. And sensitivities kind of come and go.
And that's not an allergy? And so sensitivity is not allergy?
It's not a true allergy. So okay. An allergy would be an immune response from the body. So we would perceive the what's called antigens from proteins in that food as harmful, and our body would in return produce antibodies to kind of help fight off those antigens. So it's kind of like an allergic response almost in our body, whereas some foods that we may be sensitive to could just cause mainly GI distress. So whether it was diarrhea, constipation, bloating, gas, all of those things, sometimes they can just be due to a sensitivity, not necessarily an immune response.
It's more of a run to the bathroom versus a run to the emergency room.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Good, I think that the terms are misused. They're not really fully understood, because if I would have been asked to describe allergy, something that irritated or they don't have a good reaction to. But that's a good breakdown. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you about this one. And our doctor said this one was weird. Our two-year-old is, we've been told, allergic to eggs. Maybe it's just sensitive. But he literally cannot touch an eggshell or a raw egg, or he breaks out in a rash.
That's
externally.
No, that's an allergy.
That's an allergy.
That's an allergy.
But what they've encouraged us to do is, you know, keep putting in stuff that you cook.
Yeah.
And let him eat it, mm-hmm. but just don't let him touch it.
Well, it depends, though, because it depends on how sensitive he is.
Yeah.
Because my son is severely allergic to eggs.
Okay.
We just got allergy testing done for him, and our allergist gave him a half-strength test of egg protein. And he tested 15 out of 25 on half strength, and my allergist said, I don't even want to know what his reaction would be. Mm-hmm. So the allergy means that the welt from the skin prick was 15 millimeters wide, which is big for a food allergy reaction. And that was only at half strength. So he can't touch it. He can't be near it. He can't eat any baked goods.
Got it. Yeah,
nothing. He can't eat anything with eggs in it at all.
Because there are forms of treatment that introduce the allergen,
right?
In like micro doses to build up an immunity for it.
Yeah.
But then there are other instances where, because the sensitivity is so extreme, that even a micro dose can cause anaphylaxis, anaphylactic shock. Yeah.
I had an experience right after I had my son. I developed allergies to nuts, which was horrible because I'm vegan and I was eating nuts like
crazy.
A mad woman. I was nursing, so I was like, yeah, good fats, eating nuts by the handfuls. And my throat actually was like closing. Like I was like gasping for air and I was like, what's going on? So my friend's mom is a nurse and she's like, oh, just take some Benadryl or some antihistamine. So I started keeping them in my diaper bag, in my nursing bag, wherever I was, and I would take them. But it was just randomly, and it was only certain nuts, and I couldn't remember which ones. But after I had gone to the chiropractor a couple times and got adjusted, they started dying down.
Interesting.
So I don't have them anymore. Thankfully, I can eat whatever nuts. My son doesn't have any nut allergies, but I just thought it was really strange that I had developed these allergies after, like, my birth wasn't traumatic, but, it, you know, most people... Birth isn't, you know.
It's not a day at the spa.
No, it's not. But, you know, I think because of what my body went through and your system changes after you have a baby. But I just found that really, really strange. And I was like, I'd never heard of anything like that. I've never thought that could happen.
Adult onset allergies.
Yeah. And so I was dying because, like, I love peanut butter. I ate peanut butter through my whole pregnancy. I wasn't one of the people who didn't want to do it. But, yeah, it was difficult and strange, and I thought that was weird. So maybe.
So have you noticed any of these allergic tendencies or sensitivities in your child?
He has eczema and keratosis pilaris, and not through nuts, but I notice if he eats a lot of processed foods, then his skin will get really bad. Like his eczema will pop up more, his keratosis pilaris will pop up more. So I notice if we, like, mainly breads and stuff like that. So if we cut out gluten and do more gluten-free stuff, his skin will look really nice and he won't have any itching. But if he starts up and eats more processed foods, more frozen foods, like if we're out and we decide to do that, his skin will get bad. And then I kind of tell my husband,
we need to cut back.
Yeah, he's eating too much junk food. We need to get more veggies and fruits, more good fats in there for him. But yeah, and it's, he never has anything too crazy happen other than just the skin issues, which tells me that if he had more abundance of that food, what else could happen?
Right. So here's what I hear in that story, though, that you went to the chiropractor and it sort of worked some things out. Well, and so, like, from a natural perspective of, like, you know, what are some other things or things like that, alternatives that that maybe folks can try out, Lindsay?
Yeah, so I think that it brings up a great point. And for me, a lot of this begins in the gut of the moms, particularly. And really over multiple generations, you know, we're finding that in some of our modern medicine and as also like with the water system we have now even, of course, it's done such wonders on our, you know, death rates and the infectious diseases that we have and all that. You know, we're grateful for the water system we have, but in purifying so many things in our environment, it's really throwing off the what we call microbiome within our body. So all the really good bacteria that live within our body.
Yeah, eat the food off the floor, build up the immunity. That's what we're saying, right?
Yeah.
Not exactly.
but close.
It is close. And also in protecting mom's gut and and helping her to kind of foster a good environment for that bacteria to grow.
We do need to wrap up the conversation, but I think that there might be enough information to maybe have Lindsay back on sometime.
I agree.
Again, there's so much stuff. But Gina, Jane, Lindsay, anything you want to make sure we talk about with the dietary issues or sensitivity?
I just want to know if they can outgrow them. Like, if they can outgrow them, if they're going to, if my kid's ever going to eat a fruit, yeah, is what I want to know. Will my kid eat an apple?
I can tell you from personal yes. experience, yes.
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 He did start eating broccoli, so that's a win. And I'm like, we're putting broccoli and everything. But yeah, so what, will they ever eat a variety normally, of items, yeah. not just, you know.
The five things.
Pasta with pureed kale, because that's where I'm at.
Yeah, so I think the continuous exposure is so important. Even if they don't touch it, always offer it. Always have. You can even put it in a side little ramekin next to their plate. Just always have it visible. Always have it available. Never make a big deal out of it. Just let it be kind of what it is. It's food. It's something we can choose to eat or not choose to eat. The way that adults can contribute is to always have that available so that the children have the opportunity to. And then also, you know, like with the smoothies and blending the food together, you're offering them the opportunity to build a palate towards that food. So I think that's always very helpful. And then in terms of the allergies, I would say really working on the good gut bacteria, whether that's from probiotics or from, you know, fermented foods, like kefir is a good example, you know, really fostering that healthy bacteria with good probiotics, and then also fiber-rich foods, which feed those good bacteria, can really help the sensitivities and allergies to pass on.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Lindsay. And like I said, I think we might have to do a little more digging into this topic for sure. Tons of stuff. So thanks for listening, everybody. For more information about sensory and dietary issues in children, or more information about any of our panelists, visit the episode page on our website. The conversation will continue for members of our Parent Savers Club after the show. Lindsay's going to tell us about nutrition therapy. For more information about the Parent Savers Club, visit parentsavers.com.
Hey, Parent Savers. This is Sunny. I'm one of the producers on the show. Today we have a funny parenting oops story to share with you. This is a great segment we have here on Parent Savers where you guys get to tell us your craziest parenting stories, the crazy things that happen to you, and we get to laugh. But we're laughing with you, not at you. So this story comes from Christine, and Christine says, our daughter was playing in the living room when she saw her daddy come out of the bathroom. She got really excited and squealed with delight. She kept saying, ooh, ooh. Moments later, I heard daddy grunt in pain. When I found out what happened, I couldn't stop laughing. Apparently, he forgot his towel in the bedroom, so he was pretty much naked coming out of the shower. And as with all children, they get pretty curious when they see naked bodies. And she grabbed her daddy in the nuts. So you can imagine what pain he was going through. After that, he learned he'll never forget his towel again. Christine, thank you so much for sending this in. If you guys have a funny parenting oopsie you want to share with us and all of our listeners, please either send us an email, you can comment on our Facebook page, or you can call our voicemail at 619-866-4775.
That wraps up today's episode of Parent Savers. We appreciate you listening. Don't forget to check out our sister show, Preggy Pals for Expecting Parents, The Boob Group for Moms Who Breastfeed, and Twin Talks for Parents of Multiples. This is Parent Savers, empowering new parents.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
New Mommy Media is expanding our lineup of shows for new and expecting parents. If you have an idea for a new series, or if you're a business or organization interested in joining our network of shows through a co-branded podcast, visit newmommymedia.com. Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.